Before we get started, I wanted to let you know that Nancy's giving one lucky listener a copy of A Misty Dawn Mystery. You do need to read the books in order, so to enter the giveaway, head over to the Cozy Corner Facebook page. That's facebook.com/thecozycornerpodcast. Find the post about the giveaway and leave a comment saying which Misty Dawn book you'd most like to win. Nancy will choose the winner. Hurry, the contest ends at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on Monday, December 21st. Now, on with the podcast. Welcome, listeners, to the third season of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and your podcast host. Tune in and join me as I chat with authors writing cozy and traditional mysteries. You won't find explicit violence, sex, or gore. You will find intricate plots, engaging characters, and brilliant writing. Thanks for listening. Hello, listeners. Welcome to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. I'm Alexia Gordon, author and host of the podcast. That noise in the background is my cat who decided she wanted to be a part of this episode. Nancy Cole Silverman joins me in the corner today to chat about the third Misty Dawn mystery, The House of the Setting Sun. Welcome back to the show, Nancy.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, The House of the Setting Sun is the final book in the Misty Dawn trilogy. So what's the former psychic to the stars up to this time?
Well, she's, Misty is an older woman. She's in her late 70s, and she came to California back in the 60s selling her love potions and being kind of a protester hippie. And now she's kind of aged through LA, and her clientele has grown and passed on, and she's just trying to kind of make a living because, you know, times have been tough, and she didn't have a 401k or anything. So she's moved into this house as we begin to know her in the old Craftsman Cottage, and meets Wilson, who is a shade who used to own the house, who is a former set designer, of course. And their relationship has matured. By that meaning, a shade has to go through tests in order to go on. And he's really kind of ready for his graduation. So this week we meet her with Wilson as a young woman knocks on the door looking for some help.
Now, you knew that you were writing a trilogy as opposed to a long series when you started the first Misty Dawn book, The House on Hallowed Ground. So how is writing a trilogy different from writing an open-ended series?
That's a good question. I think I really wanted to show the arc of development of Misty's relationship with Wilson because Misty could perhaps go on into other things, but I always feel like you should leave somebody kind of wanting more. Don't wear out your welcome. And I felt like with Misty, she was an interesting character. She's an older woman. She has a clientele that's very loyal to her. And we meet them and use them again from the first book to the third book. But this is really, and I wanted to show the arc of her relationship with Wilson Thorne, who is the shade, is the young man who owned the home that she's living in. And his growth, and Misty's growth too, as she kind of is ready to graduate and leave Wilson, and what her future would be without him. So this is the kind of the goodbye. So spoiler, don't read out of sequence, which is really important because I like to give away a book. And if anyone responds to you and says they would love to have me give away a book, I would love to give one, but I really want to give it in sequence. So if they haven't read the first book, I would prefer to start with the first book so they go all the way through.
Absolutely. So now, was it easier to write a definite arc with a beginning, middle, and end, knowing that there would that end book was there, versus one where the series might go on for 5 or 10 or 20 books and you can't necessarily finish developing the character at the third book if you've got 5 or 6 or 7 more to do?
I think so, because you're really having more of a contained frame. And again, this is only dealing with Misty's relationship with Wilson. Now, the mystery is different in each book because it helps Wilson evolve. And in the beginning books, of course, Wilson is a very selfish, egotistical, young man who has suddenly died and doesn't really believe he's died and doesn't want to be dead. And if he doesn't believe in psychics, but if there's anything to this, well, then why doesn't she just bring him back? And she explains she can't do that. And their relationship changes. And it is an opportunity to really show change and growth in several ways. In the first book, Misty has a cat. She has a cat named Bossy Pants. And Wilson is extremely allergic to cats. But as you go through the arc of the book, and Wilson changes, and Wilson matures, and Wilson becomes less selfish. Wilson becomes also less allergic, and he and the cat have a relationship. So it's kind of interesting in that you see the cat come up into his lap, and Wilson is stroking it in the very end of the books. And so being able to point to little subtle things like that as their relationships develops has been kind of a fun challenge for a writer, and something I've enjoyed doing. And I'm a little proud of that. I liked it.
Now, another challenge that you tackled and should be proud of is self-publishing The House of the Setting Sun. So, what was your self-publishing experience like?
Okay, and that was, I didn't know that was coming. A good question. I had a contract to do three books, and I actually I have to thank my publisher for encouraging me to write this series. When I first started writing with this publisher, I was writing the Carol Childs Mysteries, which was loosely based on some of my own experiences in Los Angeles working for talk radio back in the 80s and the 90s. And I enjoyed that. But to be really honest, they weren't doing a whole lot. And I thought, this publisher really was doing a lot with cozies. And the first series was just kind of soft-boiled mysteries. So I thought, let me try a cozy. And I had this idea and I proposed it to them and they loved it. They said, oh, they really liked it. So it was with their encouragement that I started it. And I really thought, I don't know that this is really where I want to stay because it requires me going behind the veil when you're dealing with a psychic. And I am not psychic. And I think many people are intuitive. And as we get older, you become more intuitive because kind of common sense through life teaches you a lot. But I thought this character was very interesting because there are so many psychics in LA. Every corner has a psychic. They used to have gas stations, now they've got psychics. So I thought, well, I would do this with her. And it was kind of fun and I was enjoying it, but I knew I didn't want to stay there too long because I didn't want to be pegged as a psychic writer. So I thought I'll do three books for them. So when the sec and this is why I'm not psychic. When the second book was finished, I thought I was preparing on the third, and then I suddenly got a letter saying they weren't going to continue the series. So I thought, all right, I will finish that by myself. So I finished that book, and they were happy to have me match it up with the other two, and we had letters of agreement to do that, and I own all the rights to the characters and so forth, and I was very pleased with that. So I finished the third book up, and I was, will say this, whatever your publisher does for you, it is, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes. It is a lot of work, and I'm thankful they did it. I would never want to do it again. I have done it. The series is out, and I loved it, and the series has gotten very nice reviews, which pleases me. The Ellery Queen magazine says it's what do they call it? Silverman's storytelling is charmingly entertaining, and my whole purpose of the Misty Dawn books was to bring joy to my readers. I really enjoyed writing these. They were a joyful experience. Kind of got me out of the newsroom from the Carol Childs mysteries and the whole heaviness of what's going on politically and for escapism. So these books, the whole purpose of the Misty Dawn books was to bring joy and hope and a kind of a sense of light to people. And I think they appear to be doing that, and I've been very happy with it. Escapism. We're all about escapism right now.
One thing that helps a lot of people escape their troubles are musicals, and you center the action in The House of the Setting Sun around a musical. But do you have any background in musical theater, or what led you to choose a musical as a tool to use?
Oh, and asked by a woman who likes music. Very good. I love musical theater. I love theater. Matter of fact, when I started college, I was really kind of betwixt in between being a theater major and journalism. And I chose journalism because I really wanted, I thought I want could make a difference and liked reporting and that kind of thing. And I couldn't quite balance both at the same time. So I had a journalism major, a speech minor, and I never did much more with theater, although I've done some musical theater off and on in my life, and I do like it. And so I was delighted to pick a, I had to pick a musical because it was a traveling troupe that would come to LA. That the opening night, the lead actress disappears, which would not happen. I mean, an actress may get stage fright, but she is not going to miss opening night, no matter what. I wanted to make sure that I could find something. It had to be a musical that I felt was people knew. It couldn't be an obscure musical, and that was a lot of fun. So I have this traveling troupe, and they're doing a kind of a remount of My Fair Lady, and because I felt that was familiar enough, I could use that in the theater and the theater itself. And I had a lot of fun with that because, you know, all theaters are haunted, you know, and there's and so that made was Wilson's home, of course, because Wilson, having been a former set designer, that was where he spent his time. And all of his home where Misty is living is are sets from theater productions he's done. So that was fun to do that. So I felt right at home doing it, and I had a great deal of time, and I played a lot of music in the background for My Fair Lady while I was writing it.
What's your favorite musical?
Oh gosh. You know, for different reasons, at times different things. My husband's is Singing in the Rain, which is always inspirational. I love that. I love Miss Saigon. I love The King and I. There's some awesome classics. They're, you know, I think lyricists and composers are such gifted people to be able to build emotion with just so few words and a few notes on the page, and our and we come together. You know, when you hear it, you just come together and you just sing, and it's really a beautiful thing. So I very seldom have gone to a theater where I've seen a musical production that I didn't really just find joy in. And the other night I watched when we're recording this right during the final of the election announcements here, but things had gotten so crazy that I thought I need to go watch a musical. So I turned on She Loves Me, which takes place in a little perfumery in Hungary about 1924. I think it's between the wars, and it's a beautiful love story based upon You've Got Mail, which is the music is wonderful and the acting and so forth, and it was great. So I really enjoyed that.
It's called You Love Me, is what it's called.
Yeah, She Loves Me.
He loves me.
She Loves Me. I
Loves me.
highly recommend it. And I'll do a little shout out for Broadway HD. You know, I think it's $8.99 a month, and I gifted that service to my mother, who's 96 years old, and my daughter and my son, because I think these are great educational entertainment, you know. And then there's that, like, South Pacific. What a wonderful show that was. And it's hard to get away from Rodger and Hammerstein anyway.
Now, going back to Misty Dawn, she's known as the psychic of the stars, and she's also known for assisting law enforcement in missing persons and homicide cases. So, as you mentioned, you're a journalist. So, in your work as a journalist, did you ever have reason to consult a psychic?
no. And a matter of fact, interestingly enough, though, I thought, because I'm a journalist, you know, you always have to kind of query people. And I saw one of the things is I queried for this series, I interviewed a number of psychics. And again, they didn't tell me my publisher was going to drop me. Although I didn't ask them about me, I wanted them to read about the book. They all said the series would be very successful. And one of them said, "You know, Nancy, you shouldn't be asking me about things." She says, "You've really got this." And I thought, "Well, okay, I've got this." But I didn't use crystal balls or tarot cards or anything like that, because being more of an intuitive, she doesn't need them. You know, she can kind of get a feeling off somebody from sitting down and saying, let's have tea. She loves to have tea. You know, they're really, she loves to sit and chat with people, and then she kind of really offers more of her opinion about things. Of, you know, you have a, she feels she, we all carry those we love with us, whether they're with us now or have been with us. And she kind of feels she gets a read off someone based upon that, the spirits that are with us when you walk through a room, even. So it was fun to kind of interview her, these different psychics, about these things, because psychics would tell me, they said when a person walks through the door, they really can feel either the heaviness or lightness of a person when they come in. And I think, you know, intuitively you can too. If, you know, we chat about something, you can tell kind of, gee, Nancy's in a good mood today, or she seems down, or she's moving slowly, or she's very chatty. You know, you get a feeling something's wrong. And I think that's just an intuitive feeling. The other part of that, though, is I thought, well, if I interview psychics and ask them about who the types of people that come to visit them and how they get their readings off of them, I should, because Misty Dawn is a former psychic to the stars and has worked with the police department and the FBI on finding people. I should talk to somebody on law enforcement. So I called the police department and asked if they had ever worked with a psychic, and they promptly told me no, they had not. So I thought, okay, well, that won't make my story. So in my story, because we're talking fiction, they had. So according to the LAPD, they do not, and they have not, and they would not. But I have heard on the internet of psychics that claim they have. So take that for what it is.
Yes, and I've heard on several true crime podcast folks who've admitted that they've used psychic. So it's just something they don't officially admit in law enforcement circles. Now, you were able to interview psychics, but I am assuming that you weren't able to interview any shades or spirits. But you've got Wilson, who's a major player in the story. So what challenges did you face writing a partner who's not quite human? How did you make him real?
You know, when I first sat down and I came up with the idea for this series, and then I started to kind of plot point it, kind of a very fluid outline, I didn't have Wilson in the picture at all. And I really thought I'd just have a psychic, and you know, she had worked at the police department, and people would come to her front door and want a reading and something. And when I sat down and I started to get that first couple of paragraphs on the pages, Wilson showed up. And then I thought, and I frequently do this as a writer, one of my tasks for myself is to pull up a blank page and say, who are you? You know, who is this character? Either who is the character? And I'll write the person. And then really the question, who are you? How old are you? Where have you come from? What's your background? And Wilson actually was a young man I knew in college that had unfortunately committed suicide. And I was always, we had been friends, and I mean, it was just friends. It wasn't anything, well, nothing, certainly nothing romantic or anything, but we were pals. And I was overseas at the time. I had gotten married, and I learned later from my sister that what had happened, and that I always he's just shown up in the back of my mind from time to time, as though he kind of was just wanted to chat, you know, or wanted to be there. And so I thought, I'm going to make that Wilson Thorne. And now the I think it's Steve Steinbeck with Ellery Queen Magazine asked me if I was channeling Thorne Smith, who was the creator for oh gosh, the creator for a Topper and the ghost, I think, for Topper. And I said, well, no. He says, oh gosh, Nancy, he says, when I read this, he says, I swear you're channeling Thorne Smith's Topper series. And I thought, well, Wilson Thorne, where did that come from? And my friend Thornton, who passed, and I thought maybe there was a connection. But whatever, when I was thinking about who Wilson Thorne was, he was the best of that character, that person that I knew. Was just that witty sense of humor, kind of self-indulgent. And I wanted to kind of share some time with him. And so that was him who showed up on the page. So he actually really was a person who, in my mind, was kind of caught between the real world and beyond.
Now, another real person who inspired at least a character's name was the 1950s movie star Cesar Romero. So, how'd you decide to name your detective after that particular movie star?
Oh, Cesar Romero is just, if you've been around watching old movies, he was just a charming old fellow, just a charmer. And basically that's who Cesar Romero is. He is a detective, and he has the same namesake, and he kind of looks a little like him, and he's just charming. And he has to be to deal with Misty, because he cannot admit that he has any that he gives any weight to being psychic, because as he's told her many times, he says, whatever you tell me, I've got to be able to carry into a court of law, and it can't just be some ghost or just psychic feeling. You've got to give me concrete. So whatever she and Misty and Wilson Thorne kind of can bring to her as a guiding light as to where to go to find things, it has to be more than feeling. It can't just be woo. It has to be where he can point to something and say, see, there is your clue, and she can bring it in so that Cesar Romero can actually use that as a fact. And that's kind of a weave too, in as you're developing the mystery, because it can't just be, oh well, I had this vision. She has to be able to prove it, and between Wilson and then finding the fact and taking it to Caesar, so Caesar can say, okay, well, that makes sense, because Caesar kind of believes in her, but not totally. He's not totally comfortable with it.
At least that he's willing to admit, right?
Yeah.
Or are there any other real life inspirations or ghost stories or missing persons cases behind the House of the Setting Sun?
Oh golly. It's funny, because you probably experience this too as a writer. Once you've closed a book, it's no longer yours. It's just out to the universe, and you're on to the next thing. So even as I think about it, I'm saying, what was that about? So I've kind of off into another tangent right now. I think not. I think the characters, Denise, which is Wilson's brother, who is her land Misty's landlady, because she inherited Wilson's house, of course, is kind of a compilation of different character women I've met in life. She's a realtor. She's tried 100 different occupations. She's even been kind of a she's a wannabe actress, definitely a wannabe actress. And as an actress, she's not only waited tables, but she's also been down on Hollywood Boulevard as one of these stand-up performance artists and so forth. She's done Statue of Liberty, so she's an interesting character. And of course, she had in the first book, she had this insatiable desire to meet this actor, Hugh Jackman. She's head of the Hugh Jackman fan club, and she was convinced that if Hugh Jackman had ever seen her, that they would have a relationship and be supportive of one another. Not the fact that Hugh Jackman is happily married, and and not that's just not going to happen. But in her word, in her thought, she was an actress, and she's kind of a tall, gangly looking woman, so it's not likely that she's going to be a big theater, musical center stage person, but she's happy to be out there, and doing things. So that was she was fun. She's a little like Jane Lynch, you might know. She's a little Jane Lynchy. Oh, Jane Lynchy. Yeah. And that's who she'd be, with dark hair. Very successful, kind of funny, kind of a offhanded about ways of handling things. So that was close enough, I guess, to who she is.
Now, you mentioned being on to the next thing. The next thing's a bit of a change for you. Is it something you can talk about?
Yeah, we can talk about that a little bit. I wanted to finish this series out and get this third book out. It ordinarily probably wouldn't have been out till next year, The House of the Setting Sun, that is. But I wanted to finish that off because I've been working on a historical fiction piece that is loosely based upon experiences my father had in the Second World War. And my father, I think you and I both lost fathers this year who were former military.
Yes, I was in Korea.
Yeah, yours was in Korea. So my dad was a little older than your dad, and my dad was in the Second World War. Oh, well, he did get called up to go to Korea. And back then it was before, I will tell you a story because it does apply to what it is. Back then it was before all the military was on the internet, all the documents and so forth was on the internet.
Right.
And when my father came home from the Second World War after he had been shot down, we had the three girls, my sisters and I, and so forth. And one day, right during Korea, my dad got a letter from the Department of Defense saying, his unit had been called up again. If he could he come back? And my mother just took the letter and said, "You've lost him once, you're not losing him again." And she would tell this story, and we'd all kind of, "Was that even legal?" And she goes, "I don't know, but they never came after me. And your father had been gone for long enough. And when he came back, I wasn't going to give him up again. He had three girls at home, and we needed to move on." So my father did not go to Korea, but he was his unit was called that. But and that kind of is brought up in this new book. Well, my father was shot down over Hungary during the Second World War toward the very end. And was MIA for 3 weeks. And my mother got the letter, from the War Department saying MIA. And my mom had no idea what was going on. And then he did come home. But in the letter, the book that I'm working on, I've kind of taken obviously some creative license, and he is shot down north of Lake Balaton, where the Germans have now turned and are coming back into Hungary to retake Hungary, because Hungary had been part of the Axis powers. And then switch sides, and there was a kind of almost a ground war between some people who thought they were going to be with the German side, and now they were with the Allied side, and this type of thing. And my father was kind of lost in the middle of this for a while, and how he got out, and who rescued him. And years later, after the war ended, we got another interesting letter, and that came from a young man in Hungary, who wrote to my father after the Iron Curtain was down, saying he'd found my father's plane. And that was the inspiration for this book, is my father calling my father, who in fiction calls me, also a fictional character, and says, "I need you to go and look at the plane and tell me what happened to the people who rescued me." And so that is the premise for this book, is the daughter going back to uncover her father's story. And that indeed did happen. What happened is, after the Iron Curtain went down, a number of people were now able to have contact with the West. And those that had been part of kind of a resistance movement that had hit American GIs were now able to kind of make contact again and try to find out what happened. And there were a lot of Americans that went back to Hungary after the Iron Curtain went down to kind of find these people and reunite and kind of be thank them. And so this is that story of what happened there. And it's been fun to write, very interesting to research, because not much is known about what the 15th Air Force, a lot of not what's known about what the 8th Air Force did, because those were in England flying the B-24. My dad was flying a B-24 out of Italy, and that was the 15th Air Force. And so really researching what they did and what their part of was during the war. And we used to have reunions at the Air Force Academy every couple of years when I was growing up with my dad's unit.
You were also talking to me earlier about how different writing historical fiction was from writing mysteries. You want to talk a little bit about the difference between the writing the two genres?
Yeah, it is very interesting. And this has a bit of a mystery to it as well, because of something she's looking for and what she finds that she didn't expect. But when you're doing a mystery like with my Carol Childs mystery, Carol has to be the initiator to dig, to find, and what is she's going to do. When you're doing historical fiction, there's a lot of uncovering, and what does it mean, and where do you go? We'll see. I'm enjoying it. I had some interest in. I'm an agent who's anxious to see it, so fingers crossed that happens.
Fingers
So,
crossed.
yeah, a lot of fingers crossing here. Yeah.
And well, while we're waiting for the historical fiction novel, we can read The House of the Setting Sun. So where can readers buy a copy of that?
Okay, well, you can go online just about anywhere. You can get an ebook just about anywhere. You can get a print or a hardback book at Barnes and Noble, or a print on Amazon, and on Kobo and Smashwords and everywhere else, but Amazon and Barnes and Noble mainly. And you can look. about what I'm doing. And I do short stories too, and there's some audio books and so forth that I've done on my website, nancycolesilverman.com. And some of them are free to listen to if you want. And I enjoy doing that in my off time when I'm not writing. I just kind of enjoy doing some voiceover work as well for my own stuff. Nobody else's, just my own stuff. So that's my story.
And you're sticking to it.
I am.
It's a great story. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. My guest today was Nancy Cole Silverman, author of The House of the Setting Sun, The Third Misty Dawn Mystery. I'm your host, Alexia Gordon. Until next time, goodbye. I'd like to give a big thank you shout out to my newest patron, Elizabeth Kirby. If you'd like to support the podcast on Patreon, you can go to www.patreon.com/author Alexia Gordon. Thank you again, Elizabeth. Thanks, listeners, for joining me for another episode of The Cozy Corner with Alexia Gordon. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a 5-star rating or review wherever you listened. Follow the podcast on social media. I'm on Facebook as The Cozy Corner Podcast and Twitter and Instagram as podcast_cozy. Now you can support me on Patreon. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month and get a shout out on an episode of The Cozy Corner. Support at higher levels gains access to patron-only posts, thank you gifts, and giveaways. Sign up at www.patreon.com/authoralexiagordon. Thank you for your support, and thanks for listening. Until next time, goodbye.